This is the Big 550 KTRS. I'm Paul Harris. Of course, the Beatles. And are you aware of the Beatles' connection to St. Louis? Well, you are if you've heard me over the years, because I've had a chance to talk to this woman a few times, and it's always a pleasure. Her name is Louise Harrison. Yes, Harrison, George's sister, the one who originally introduced the Beatles to America, because she was in America before they were. She was living in a small town in southern Illinois, Benton, Illinois, where she lived for many, many years. And she invited George to come over, and he was here in 1963. The rest of the Beatles didn't arrive until February of 1964, of course. But now Louise has written more about her experiences as George's sister and as a promoter of the Beatles. She was kind of their front lady for the Beatles here in the United States. And she's written about it in a wonderful new book called My Kid Brother's Band, a.k.a. The Beatles. Louise Harrison, how are you today?
I'm very well, thank you.
Nice to have you back on the show. It's been many years since we spoke. In fact, last time we spoke, you were still living in southern Illinois, which I understand you've now abandoned for California.
Oh, no, I haven't ever abandoned anything. I just move around a lot.
Oh, you do?
You know, it's one of those things where the sheriff comes and knocks on the door and says, you've got to leave by noon.
Well, let's go right back to the beginning here and talk about that first visit that George made to the United States 5 months before the Beatles came to America to do the Ed Sullivan Show. You invited him over to come visit you in Benton, right?
Yes, that's correct. And as a matter of fact, he and Ringo were supposed to be coming. Incidentally, happy birthday, Ringo.
Yeah.
But the two of them were supposed to be going to come over. And I arranged, I'd been, you know, trying to do some promotion for them, trying to get some airplay. In fact, I was bugging Bud Connell at KXOK at the time. And anyway, I got a TV thing for them in Carbondale with Jim Cox. I think he works in St. Louis now, but he used to work in TV in Carbondale at that time. I had this TV thing all set up for George and Ringo to do. And when I wrote and told them about it, Ringo said, oh, she's going to make us work. I'm not going. So ended up my brother Peter came instead. And actually, the picture on the back of my book is the picture that was taken in Benton in that September when George and Peter came to visit me. That particular picture disappeared for 50 years, and it just finally showed up again, and we were publishing the book. And so the publisher put that particular picture right on the back cover.
One of my favorite stories that you tell in the book is about how George, for a night, became a member not of the Beatles, but of the Four Vests.
Vests, exactly. Well, he only sang three or four songs with them, so it wasn't really. But it was rather comical because the people, it was at a VFW club in southern Illinois in a place called El Dorado, and the band, we had been invited to go and watch them play. And towards the end of the evening, the lead guitarist came over to my brother Peter, actually, and said, hey, do you think George would sing a couple of songs with us? So anyway, George got up on stage and sang a few songs. And the next thing was the whole place was pandemonium. People were screaming and jumping up and down and banging their fists on the table and shouting and everything. And one old guy came over at the end of the when George got off the stage, and he came over and he put his arm around George's shoulder. He says, you know, son, you could really go places with the right kind of help. And then somebody else came over to the band leader, Gabe McCarty, and he said to him, hey, you know, that kid that's trying out for your band, you'll be crazy if you don't hire him.
So these guys had no idea who the Beatles were, even though you had started to get them a little bit of airplay in America by that point, right?
Yes, but there again, I wasn't actually using the word Beatles because, you know, back then there was no connotation of Beatles other than for an insect.
Uh-huh.
And so, yeah, you know, so I was just saying my kid brother's band. And it was funny, too, because back last fall, Paul McCartney was doing a concert, and I was in San Diego, and I got a chance to meet with him backstage. And I gave him a copy of the book, and it was funny. He looks down at the title of the book, and he says, your kid brother's band?
Oh, that's funny. Tell me a little bit about life with George in Liverpool and your parents' influence on both of you.
Well, living in Liverpool, you know, most, well, not most of my life, but, you know, 5 or 6 years of it was spent during World War II. And, of course, I talk about that in the book, about how hilarious it was, because different, you know, from the way things have been in America since 9/11, you know, everybody's all paranoid. But back then, you know, we weren't the slightest bit scared. And, you know, we would actually go out in the backyard when the bombers were flying over up above, and we'd just shake our fists at them, you know, and say, you think you're scaring us? You know, you've got to try something better than that.
Yeah.
But, you know, so we had a very, very happy childhood. You know, we weren't rich, but then we didn't know that there was such a thing as rich anyway. And later on in life, I realized that most people who are really rich are miserable because they're always worried about somebody trying to get their money from them, you know.
Yeah.
So I think it's a lot better to be, you know, just have enough money to pay your bills and be done with it, you know. But we had a really happy childhood. Mum and Dad were, I don't know, I think if everybody had parents like our mum and dad, we wouldn't have any wars in the world because they didn't believe in strife. You know, they believed in reaching out a hand to help the next person. In fact, my mum met a few elderly ladies. Well, they're much younger than I am now, but she would make extra loaves of bread each week to take to, you know, to these older people. And, you know, they were always doing things to help other people. So, you know, that's the whole atmosphere that we grew up with. And we, you know, whatever we had ourselves, if we had a little bit left over, it was always given to somebody else. So, you know, that was the whole family atmosphere, was, you know, having fun, having a good laugh about things that, especially if they were really serious or frightening, then you'd make a bigger joke about them, you know. So, in fact, I tell quite a few of the funny stories that we found really hilarious during the war.
Did your parents get to live long enough to experience all of George's success?
Mom died actually on this day, on Ringo's birthday, on Ringo's 30th birthday. And she, you know, she died early. She was only 58 when she died. But, you know, she had had a lot of fun with, you know, all of George's success and everything. And then my dad died a few years later. They both died early, which, you know, now that I'm in my 80s, I feel like, you know, it's not fair they got let off early for good behavior.
Tell me about your relationship with George Martin and also with Brian Epstein, if you had one with each of them.
Well, yeah, not really a relationship so much as the letter writing. You know, I was writing letters to them and they were writing back. Actually, you know, Brian was very, very, happy about my, my involvement and, you know, especially all the advice that I was giving him and everything. And that worked very, very well until he actually came to the United States. And quite by accident, I messed up one of his plans. He had made, again, you know, from not knowing anything about America, he didn't realize that every radio station was playing Beatle music, you know, in New York when they came to the Ed Sullivan show, every radio station in the city had been playing the music and promoting them and everything. But he had made an exclusive agreement with this guy, Murray the K, and that he was going to be the only one that got to talk to the Beatles, which was a terrible mistake, but of course he didn't know that. Anyway, I tell the story in the book, so I won't try to go into all of it here. But I ended up being on a radio show with the WMCA Good Guys, and I had to call George at the hotel and have him take some medication because he had this really bad strep throat. And while he was on the phone with me, he talked a little bit to the people at WMCA, and they recorded this little conversation that he had with them, and then they played it back every hour on the half hour, and because they had been denied any access to the Beatles.
Yep.
And then, anyway, when Brian Epstein realized that another radio station was actually playing some of George's, you know, a couple of sentences of George's, he was really angry with me because he said I'd messed up his exclusive agreement. agreement with Murray Bakay, but in retrospect, you know, it was really the right thing to do to give the other radio stations in the area a little bit of access to the people that they'd been promoting like crazy, you know.
And I want to go back to something you mentioned there, because a lot of people don't know that when the Beatles came to do that first Ed Sullivan show, George was really sick, and you have the story in the book about how you're watching him there, and you're not just taken in by how America is reacting to your brother, but you're also thinking, please continue to have enough energy to make it through this, right?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, I was really nervous because his temperature was 104.
Wow.
When he came into town on the Friday, and by the time they did the show on Sunday, see, they actually had to do a show in the afternoon. They added an extra show, and they actually recorded a show in the afternoon of Sunday. So Sunday night was not the first time that he performed that weekend.
Right.
And, and by the time he did do the show in the evening, his temperature was down to 102. But, and I was really upset because, you know, they were making, you know, you've got to do this thing, you've got to do this press conference, and you've got to, you know, they were dragging him here, there, and everywhere. And I was afraid that he was just going to collapse, you know, and I started to be angry at myself for having pushed so hard to get them to be, you know, big shots. And I was starting to think to myself, you know, you've just made your little brother now into a product that everybody's pushing around, you know, and I was beginning to wish I'd never, ever gone to a radio station in the first place, you know.
But then,
after a few days, and he started feeling better and everything kind of straightened out, so it was okay.
Yeah, and by the way, that afternoon show that they recorded with Ed Sullivan aired, a couple of weeks later as their second Ed Sullivan appearance. Last thing I've got to ask you about, Louise, because you've mentioned that today is Ringo's 75th birthday. Are the two of you still in touch?
Well, I've never really pursued any of the Beatles. I always made a point, you know, there were so many millions of fans wanting to know every detail of their lives that I always made a point of backing off, you know. Whenever I was there with George and I was with them, then I was part of the group, you know. But other than that, I've stayed away from, you know, pushing myself into their lives. If there's a concert that they're doing and I happen to be in the same area, I will go to it, but that's about it, you know.
Well, if it helps at all, we still consider you part of the greater St. Louis area, even as you leave and travel and go and have your life elsewhere. We still consider you one of ours.
Okay, well, I am, you know. Let's face it, as far as I'm concerned, most people consider me as the global mum of the Beatle family, so wherever there are Beatles, you know, I'm their mum. In fact, I was at we did a concert at the Mayo Clinic a few weeks ago, and it was an event that was put on by the Mayo, the whole Mayo complex. There was about 1,000 people that had just retired in the last couple of years, and they were giving this party for all of the retirees. And so I had to introduce the band. I went up on stage. I said, are there any Beatle fans here? And, of course, they all yelled. And I said, well, okay. I said, if you're a Beatle fan, I'm your mum. So I said, say hello to your mum. And they all shouted out, hello, mum.
The band,
so,
Louise.
You know, all the people in St. Louis, I'm still your mum, no matter which part of the country I might be living in.
The band Louise is talking about is Liverpool Legends, which she still manages to this day. And the book is such a wonderful read. It's called My Kid Brother's Band, a.k.a. The Beatles. Louise Harrison, such a pleasure to have you back on the show. Thanks for your time today.
Anytime. Just give me a call. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. And cheerio to all my friends.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big Five.